KMUN, it's 8:29.
You're listening to local and regional news on KMUN 91.9 FM. I'm your host, Skylar Butenchin. In today's news, an update on the sewage spill that happened Monday at Cannon Beach. And KMUN News Director Katie Brankowitz has a conversation with Warrenton Mayor Henry Balancifer about many issues facing the city. These stories and more are up next. You're listening to KMUN.
By mail to all active members
and available at your favorite local information coffee shop.
Email to view the current online, go to KMUN.
National Guard troops remain blocked from deploying in Portland following a federal appeals court order yesterday. Dirk Vanderhart reports.
After a vote by its 29 judges, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled it would take a closer look at whether the Guard can be sent to Portland. In doing so, the court threw out a ruling three of its members issued last week. That order found President Trump had legally federalized the Oregon National Guard. An 11-judge appeals panel will now take up the case. The order likely means no National Guard members will be deployed to Portland in the immediate future. It comes as a federal judge prepares to hold a trial this week on whether Trump acted appropriately when he called in the Guard in late September. The president has said a troop presence is necessary to address protests at a U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement facility, but state and city officials argue those demonstrations have been small and largely peaceful. I'm Dirk Vanderhart reporting.
A federal judge has temporarily blocked the Trump administration from canceling $35 million in sex education grants. That's after Oregon, Washington, and 14 other states, along with the District of Columbia, sued the administration. OPB's Amelia Templeton reports.
The Trump administration directed states to scrub their sex ed curriculums of any mention of gender identity, how a person's internal sense of gender can be different from their biological sex. If states refused, they would lose their share of funding for two sex ed programs approved by Congress. Oregon, along with 15 other states and the District of Columbia, sued the Department of Health and Human Services. They argued that the agency was violating the Constitution by imposing new conditions on spending that had already been approved. The administration argued that Congress never intended the program to teach that gender can be distinct from sex. The judge found fault with that argument, saying the programs are supposed to use, quote, medically accurate information. States can keep their curriculum as is while the arguments play out in court.
Washington's governor says he'll move state money around to help fund food banks during the federal government shutdown. On Tuesday, Bob Ferguson said he'll direct nearly $2.2 million per week to help people in the state who rely on the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP. Those benefits are set to end November 1st due to the shutdown. Ferguson says the first funding will happen on the 3rd. Over 900,000 Washingtonians use the federal SNAP program to help buy food. Meanwhile, Washington joined other states in a lawsuit against the Trump administration, alleging the SNAP program was suspended unlawfully. Ferguson says the weekly funding will continue until federal funding is restored.
I'm Sylvia Thorpe. You're listening to KMUN. The Spokane Tribe of Indians has a new grant to continue its cultural preservation efforts at its language immersion school. But as Spokane Public Radio's Owen Henderson reports, this project goes beyond language revitalization.
Ethnobotany is the study of a people's traditional knowledge and customs regarding plants and their uses. Now, the Spokane tribe is using the practice to create lessons about the plants their elders used for food, medicine, and ceremonies. Spokane tribal member Kathy Roper says working on this project has already helped her feel more connected to her identity.
Learning the language, learning more about the culture, and learning more about the plants, it is really healing. So I think that's kind of like an element that we're putting into our lessons as well, is, you know, our culture and our language really brings us back to who we are as people, brings us back to who we are as Spokane.
Some of that knowledge has already trickled into the non-tribal world, like health supplements that use elderberries and wild rose. But Coeur d'Alene tribal member and Spokane tribe curriculum developer Annette Pione says there's knowledge in the archives the tribe won't share.
because we don't want it commercialized. We believe the commercialization ravages our plants and they get taken over and exploited, and there's no ethical harvesting going on, and we lose areas.
As well as lesson plans for the Incha Espuus Language Immersion School, Pion and the Language and Culture Office are compiling a database of plant locations and uses for tribal staff. But Pion says only a portion of the knowledge will be made public. I'm Owen Henderson reporting.
Cannon Beach officials say a sewage spill that happened Monday has been dealt with and there is no further risk to the public. The overflow was reported Monday morning. People were told to avoid wading in nearby creeks, pools of water on the beach, or in discolored water or water runoff flowing into the ocean. City crews have since cleaned up the spill. Samples of the overflow revealed no danger to the public. According to the city, the overflow happened after monitoring equipment meant to help the city pinpoint the source of sporadic bacteria detections came loose. The flow monitor got stuck in a utility hole upstream from a pump station. Toilet paper, paper towels, wipes, and other debris caught around the dangling flow monitor and blocked a sewage pipe, causing the overflow. Cannon Beach City officials say they are taking steps to make sure there is no risk of it happening again. This is KMUN News. This summer, Warrenton City Commissioner Tom Dyer announced he would be resigning from his post because of health reasons. This left a vacancy on the Warrenton City Commission. Four people applied to fill the seat and participated in a public meet and greet earlier this week. On Tuesday, the Warrenton City Commission selected Dyer's replacement. KMUN's Katie Frankowitz sat down with Mayor Henry Balensiefer on Wednesday to hear about who they picked and to get an update on other issues impacting Warrenton. One of the topics they touched on is the FEMA BIOP, which involves changes to floodplain development policies. The changes are intended to protect endangered and threatened species and habitat, but have sparked concerns across many coastal Oregon communities, including Warrenton. The following conversation has been edited for length.
So we're going to just dive right in this morning. You had a meeting last night, and you now have a new commissioner coming out of that meeting. Tell me a little bit about who you appointed and why.
So I can't speak for the whole commission, but I can say that Mike Moha was selected. There was no bad pick. As a matter of fact, this is probably the deepest bench of folks that we've seen, all well suited for the role. Mike Moe has been on the Planning Commission for 10 years. He chairs it currently. He was part of the WBA. He ran the Warrenton's 4th of July parade. He's been very active through his work at the school district. Mike is a quick shoe-in to be on the City Commission. He still has to complete some trainings, OGEC, Oregon Ethics Commission, and League of Oregon City's basic electeds trainings before he can be sworn in, but I'm sure that'll happen pretty quickly.
When do you expect him to be sworn in by, roughly?
I would expect in a month or so.
Okay.
Yeah.
And he's stepping into former Commissioner Tom Dyer's seat. Tom's seat expires in 2028, at the end of 2028, so he'll be filling out the rest of that term. I did want to talk briefly about Tom.
Sure.
He was a longtime commissioner, longtime member of the city of Warrenton in various capacities. You guys also made a declaration at that most recent meeting declaring a day of service kind of in his honor. Could you talk a little bit about Tom Dyer's service for the city and then this day of service?
Sure. Tom Dyer was elected the same time I was to the city commission. We got elected in 2012, took office in 2013. And he has been a gentle giant, for lack of a better term. He's always been the deft touch of, you know, how do we take a softer approach? How do we come alongside people? When we had first kicked off nuisance property enforcement, he had realized that some of the people that were going to get hit by that enforcement were folks that were either elderly or maybe had accumulated too much stuff and were not going to be able to physically or financially get rid of it all. And so he developed task forces and, you know, convinced the commission to give some extra time for his task forces, business leaders, truckers, general, you know, committee or city members to work on these properties and get the resources to get it all out and cleaned up. And it was his coming alongside those folks, despite the fact that he had suffered severe physical and health ailments during his time as a commissioner. During his time as a commissioner, he actually had a liver transplant. And he stated his health is the reason why he's stepping down now. But mm-hmm. we felt that it was important to honor that above and beyond personal work and sacrifice that he did as a commissioner. And so we declared November 2nd as the Tom Dyer Day of Service. And there's actually going to be a cleanup 10 o'clock starting at the Hammond Marina this coming Sunday.
Switching gears a little bit to talk about upcoming city issues and concerns. So we're in kind of a strange time right now. We are looking at the potential suspension of SNAP benefits. Mm-hmm. That's the nutrition assistance program that is potentially not going to be funded as the government shutdown continues going into the next month. That will affect Warrington constituents. There's already talks among service providers about how they try to help fill that gap or meet the need. What's the role of the city and specifically of the mayor in these kinds of situations?
Well, I would just say that Warrington is kind of unique. It has one of the lowest tax rates in the county. So property taxes alone only account for $1.2 million of our revenue. So there's not a lot of money to work with. It's not like the city's going to have the financial capability to do any type of stopgap for that. This is really a state and federal issue, state being that state also has some programs to do that, but they're cutting them as well. We have been encouraging our congressional delegation to figure it out and make something happen. We, as a developed industrial nation, should not be starving our people to achieve some sort of political aim. It's morally and legislatively bankrupt. Congress needs to do something to get this done and stop holding people hostage as the negotiations go on. It's really a fail of your leadership, and not just the leadership, but leadership in general in Congress.
That's just kind of one of the bigger immediate issues. Obviously, Warrington has its own specific to its city mm-hmm. issues. I was hoping you could talk a little bit about a big one, which is the FEMA plans for the floodplains. Jumping out of the conversation for a minute, after listening back, I realized I didn't do a very good job of setting this particular topic up. So I'm going to give you, the listener, the Cliff Notes version. The FEMA biop that Mayor Balenciefer and I are about to talk about comes out of a lawsuit. The new measures that FEMA developed as a result are intended to help protect habitat and threatened and endangered species. For cities like Warrington, it's a complicated debate, and Mayor Balenciefer is going to speak to his perspective on that. Okay, back to the interview. For listeners who are not as familiar with that, do you want to take a shot at summarizing it?
Oh, man. Go check out floodplainprotection.org. That's the agency or the entity fighting the biological opinion. There's two things happening, and Warrington happens to be on the forefront of both. The biological opinion that FEMA is putting forward essentially radically changes flood insurance, and it becomes, as FEMA has even put it, if you wish to build a 1,500-square-foot home on a standard lot, which in cities is about 0.17 acres, they're saying that actually you're going to have to buy extra property nearby in order to mitigate for meeting current flood code and the new flood code. It basically adds over $100,000 to the price of building a 1,500-square-foot home. And this isn't just about housing. This is also about roads. So any new roads that you build, that's going to have to get mitigated. Any sidewalks, any trails, you name it, infrastructure that's put into the ground that's non-pervious, so a pipe, that could technically end up requiring mitigation. It's going to drive the public cost of infrastructure through the roof.
And Warrington is not alone in having concerns about this. Obviously, if within our listening area, there are, across Tillamook County, for example, there are a lot of communities really concerned about what it will mean for the future of development in their community, the impact on local economies. Things are also sort of bound up. It's in a very strange limbo period right now.
Yeah, so we're suing FEMA, saying that they don't actually have, under the congressional authorization of the National Flood Insurance Protection or Flood Insurance Act, the statutory authority to actually implement these rules. And this whole thing started because of a lawsuit. So it's not simply people keep saying, well, can't the federal administration just nix it out? That's not how this works. It's under a court case that started this whole process. So it's going to be a court that's going to have to get us out. But essentially, this is going to affect 31 of the 36 counties in the state of Oregon. It's going to be, it's not just Warrington. And the other issue that a lot of people aren't paying attention to is the upcoming Risk 2.0 mapping process. So a lot of places, they might have just gotten new flood maps, but in reality, Warrington's the first Risk 2.0 map in the state. It's supposed to be implemented in about 2 years. and it takes our city, which currently is 44% in the floodplain, and brings it up to 84% of the structures of the city will be in the floodplain, which means the flood, the biop and all the flood code that currently didn't apply will apply. And that means if you have a mortgage that didn't require flood insurance, it will require, or you'll go into default.
We're running a little short on time, but I guess anything else that's sort of looming for you or you see becoming a challenge or a priority for the city in the near future?
Yeah, well, obviously the biop's the biggest thing in terms of our cost futures and all that, but we're redoing the E-Dock, the commercial docks in the marina. That's going to be a major boon for that marina and for all the small businesses that are those boats. We're also going to be doing the concept planning this year for the long-awaited pet project of mine, which is the crab and fishing pier in the Hammond Marina.
Oh, okay.
Really
okay.
Excited for that. There is no public crabbing and fishing pier, or fishing access for that matter, for salmon on the lower Columbia River on the Oregon side.
So you're doing the concept planning for that. Is there any sense of like where that would even go in the marina, or is that what you're trying to find out?
Yeah, it'd be on the East Beach. Okay. So we had worked with the Marine Board and Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife and had directors come out to survey it. They've done some fishing surveys too. And they found actually a surprising number of different species can be caught if you go to the east side. Originally, it was going to be at Seafarers Park, but the East Beach side is actually the one that has the best crabbing and fishing available.
Interesting. I'm sure that will garner a lot of interest. When should people start maybe keeping an eye out for times when they can have input or learn more about that process?
Probably next fiscal year, after the concept plan's done. That's when we're going to start really pushing hard on trying to get things going. Hopefully by then we'll have had the sewer treatment plant completely funded and ongoing. So
we're talking next summer, maybe start paying attention to things?
Late summer.
And we didn't even talk about the treatment plant. Anything you want to say about that?
I will just say this. The city is moving forward on the sewer treatment plant, and we've been planning to do that regardless. This is not something that we're doing because new development is coming in. It had to have been done anyway. We started having capacity issues in the late 2000s, mostly because the state changed the rules related to effluent discharge regulations. And so we're in the process of getting started on that construction project, and we'll be kind of that way we can reduce the cost increases that happen with waiting till everything's fully and funded. We've engaged a lobbyist group for state and federal funding, and we'll continue to pursue all avenues. It'll be a good thing for the city of Warrenton, and hopefully we'll avoid doing something like what happened at Cannon Beach recently, where you have discharges. We're in the design phase right now in engineering, but essentially with the deadlines is we have programmed enough single-family homes into there that we won't be affecting any other people's ability to build their dream home, so to speak. But large-scale development will definitely go into moratorium if we don't get this going by the next couple of years.
All right. Well, Mayor Bouncyfer, thank you so much for making time with me today to answer my questions and get us updated on what's going on in Warrenton. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on.
If you're just joining us, that was KMUN's Katie Frankowitz speaking with Warrenton Mayor Henry Bouncyfer. If you missed part of the conversation, you can always go online at kmun.org/news and check out our news podcast. Miami Foley Road in Tillamook County is now fully open after a substantial roadwork project was completed last week. A storm back in 2023 caused two culverts at Crystal Creek and Dry Creek along Miami Foley Road to fail. Two temporary bridges built within 3 weeks after the storm allowed traffic to continue flowing while the Oregon Department of Transportation completed the $3.3 million project. Both new permanent bridges employ concrete beam structures. The Crystal Creek Bridge includes 9 60-foot beams, and the Dry Creek Bridge includes 9 50-foot beams. This story comes to us through a news partnership with the Tillamook Headlight Herald, online at tillamookheadlightherald.com. You're listening to KMUN News. If you have a news tip or story idea, get in touch. Email us at news1@kmun.org. That's news, the numeral 1, at kmun.org. Local and regional news on KMUN is brought to you by our news partners and the KMUN news team that includes me, your host and producer, Skylar Butenchen, news director, Katie Frankowitz, and our intern, Sylvia Thorpe. Our news broadcasts air Monday through Thursday, beginning at 7:59 in the morning and 4:59 in the evening. Thanks for tuning in to KMUN. The Ship Report with Joanne Rideout is coming up next.